of the Holy Ghost. Amen. Also like to invoke Saint Fidelis of Sigmaringen, a very zealous apostle of the faith who died as a martyr. Saint Fidelis, pray for us. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Ghost. Amen. All right. Our scheduled topic for this evening is statistics. And are you all ready to look at a bunch of bad numbers? That's what we're going to be looking at. So, of course, it proves the point that this could not be the work of God when we see how bad the numbers are. So there's more time this evening because we're just going to be looking at numbers. There's more time to ask questions. So feel free to make it, any question that relates even remotely to what we're talking about, feel free to bring it up. So I have here, well, actually what we're going to do is there's actually 19 pages in our book, Tumultuous Times, that are devoted to statistics. And since this book was published in 2004, that's 14 years ago, we will also look at some more recent statistics, and I'm going to wait before I hand this out. These are the statistics as of 2013. So let's talk about the numbers. And I don't do this in a holier than thou sort of spirit, you know, because we know that we're all sinners and we all need to be so grateful for the grace of God, and you know, we are not by any means perfect. But what we absolutely can do and need to do is to dispel the myth, the lie, that Vatican II was a good thing, that Vatican II was a renewal. It was, I think it was Hutton Gibson in one of his books, he says, if Vatican II was renewal, that's like calling the bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki urban renewal. And he didn't mean that as a joke, because we know how tragic that was. I mean, that was not renewal. That was an utter destruction of those cities. And so we see an enormous amount of blindness, absolutely enormous. I can't wrap my head around it. I can't get my thinking around how people can look at something terrible and say, isn't that good? Isn't that wonderful? As a matter of fact, this is a good time to insert a little bit of reading. You don't have it in your book, but this just goes to show how willfully blind these leaders of Vatican II were. They kept saying this is going to be wonderful, this is going to be a renewal of the church, we're going to see an explosion of conversions, we're going to see, you know, the Spirit moving among us. But look at the statistics, look at the numbers, look at the figures. It is alarming by any definition. It's a destruction, but it's a downward slide at the very least. But anyway, this is an extract from one of the leading lights at Vatican II. This is Cardinal Franz Koenig. And that's a very German name, German-sounding name. And he was the Cardinal Archbishop of Vienna. And he died, I think, died around the year 2005. And he was 98 years old. So he's quite advanced in years. So died around 2005. But anyway, This autobiography of his was published a year after he died, if I'm not mistaken. But listen to the title of one of the chapters from this book, Vatican II, the highlight of my life. Obviously completely infected with modernism. I mean, he was looking at what was happening at Vatican II and he thought it was wonderful. Well, let's just try to understand how he thinks, because this is how all modernists think. And of course, there are the ones who know very well what's going on, and they're just absolutely determined to destroy the church. I mean, there are those who absolutely want to destroy the church. And then there were others that didn't want to destroy the church, but thought that this modernist stuff was going to be wonderful for the church. But anyway, I'm just going to read, again, this is from his, these are his own words. John the 23rd was and called himself a simple man, a peasant's son, and yet he called the signals for the council. He triggered what was to prove a momentous watershed in the Roman Catholic Church. It was he who set in motion that sea change which transformed the church from a static, authoritarian church that spoke in monologues to a dynamic, sisterly church that promoted dialogue. Does that tell you a lot about how he thinks? He doesn't want any of this top-down direction. He wants dialogue. He says, you know, let's discuss and see what, you know, how we can get along, see what we can come up with through rapprochement, you know, through getting along with each other. Again, blindness. I can't think of any other word that accurately describes this. I saw a lot of Pope John and will never forget his straightforwardness, the cheerfulness with which he approached the arduous tasks that faced him every day, and his infectious sense of humor, which he always had on tap. The summoning of the Second Vatican Council will always remain linked to the person of this Pope. In January 1959, while he was still finally making up his mind as to whether he should call a council or not, he seemed at times to be amazed by his own courage. It was soon after he had announced that he was summoning a council that he confided to me in private audience. It was during the octave of prayer for Christian unity in January 1959, you know, that in view of the hurtful separation of the Christian churches, the idea of summoning a council suddenly came to me. By the way, I don't believe this. I think he had in mind, if he ascended the throne of Peter, he was going to call the council, period. That's what it would take to revolutionize everything. So I have real doubts believing that. Okay, here's some more from this Cardinal Koenig. I had always an urge to go out into the world and get to know other countries, other religions. On a visit to England as a young curate in the 1930s, I remember being fascinated by the different Christian churches and beliefs. Unlike in Austria, where almost everyone was Catholic, here one encountered Anglicans, Baptists, Methodists, Quakers, etc. I was staying with a Roman Catholic parish priest in southern England when I discovered that there was a convent of Anglican nuns nearby. And of course, he goes on to say he thought that was, you know, that's pretty good. That's amazing. Anglican nuns. But unfortunately, they're still heretics. They still deny church doctrine. But again, from his early years when he was a priest, he was always oriented towards this, how can we get along with the other religions? And instead of being fascinated by all these other religions, he should have got on his knees and wept that souls were outside the true church. You know, that would be the difference between somebody who knows that the importance of the Catholic faith and those who think, oh, this is no big deal, this is all right. So no wonder when Vatican II came along, he was all in favor of it and, again, called it the highlight of his life. Soon after the council was announced, I heard that every council father could take a theological advisor, a so-called peritus, to the council with him. I immediately rang Father Karl Rahner. He's one of the worst names. So again, it gives you a flavor for how he's thinking. He picks a very way out theologian, Jesuit. He's going to have him go to Rome. I mean, that was his immediate thought. That's the right advisor for me, Karl Rahner. By the way, here we'll spell his name for you. Pardon me? German or Austrian, they're very, very close. By the way, he's almost as bad, or maybe, I don't know if he was as, well, he's definitely along the lines of, who's the other one that I told you about? Hans Küng, who is Swiss, and who denies. He's even worse than Bergoglio, if you can imagine that. But anyway, he denies Catholic doctrine left and right, and he's also planning to, he's going to end his own life because he's suffering from Parkinson's. So these are among the two worst names. So again, Koenig, I've got my advisor right there in Rahner. Yes. He's a priest, yes. He was validly ordained in the 1950s. Yes. This is okay. You know, he's justified it all. You see, this is the problem with modernism. Modernism unhinges itself from objective truth. And so you can justify anything. Once you've cut away from, there are things that are black and white. Once you unhinge yourself from that, where do you end up? It's like letting go of the anchor, lifting up your anchor in a storm. Where are you going to end up? Who knows? On a reef. He was there in 1950. He was in St. Peter's Square when Pope Pius XII solemnly proclaimed the Assumption of Our Lady as a solemn dogma. And he said, I was rejoicing with everybody else, but later on I came to doubt it. And he was the blasphemer who said, the assumption is only an assumption. Again, one of the worst heretics, never been excommunicated. He's just not allowed to teach in a Catholic university, which is surprising because they let all the other heretics teach. And again, people have lost the sense of how terrible heresy is. I mean, heresy is nothing less than giving poison to somebody and saying, here, eat this. I put it in a tasty piece of food. I put it in a piece of cake. I put it in a donut. What would you think of somebody who would put poison into food and give it to somebody to eat? You have to say a murderer. But that's what heresy does. It literally helps destroy souls, and it leads them to hell because it teaches them false doctrines, false beliefs. So anyway, let's read a little bit more here. So I immediately rang Father Karl Rahner, a Jesuit whom I knew well, and asked him to accompany me to Rome. I wanted a theologian who would help me get a better grasp of the overall connections, but also to present the faith in such a way that it moved people today and did not pass them by. I knew that Rahner was convinced that our mission was not to keep the faith locked away behind closed doors, but to go out into the world and proclaim the gospel message. When I asked to accompany me, however, Rahner was aghast. What are you thinking? He said. Rome has considerable misgivings about me and my writings already. Imagine what they would say if I turned up as a council theologian. So under Pope Pius XII, people like this were, you know, basically, you know, I don't know what the right word is here, silenced, you know, I don't think they were silenced enough, but they definitely were not encouraged. So he's saying that to Cardinal Koenig. By the way, Koenig is the German word for king. So, Cardinal King. So, and with that, he declined. So Karl Rahner told him, I don't want to do it. They think I'm, you know, bad. By the way, if the true church thinks you're bad, don't you think you should change? Don't you, where's the humility to say, you know, maybe I'm wrong? But he's, you see, these people, I truly believe they're just overflowing with pride. They are going to set the church straight. They have no teaching authority, but they know they're going to set the church straight. Yes, go ahead. Yes. Exactly. That is the problem with the modernist, liberal, heretical mindset. You know, they, you know, Pope St. Pius X described people like this very well in his encyclical on modernism. I mean, he says, you tell them you have a problem with pride, you don't want to listen to the church, and they will take great offense at it. Okay. Well, so let's continue. What does the cardinal say about Rahner here? So, and with that, he declined. I asked him to think about it and said I would ring again later. When I did, Rahner said, "All right, in God's name, but you must take the responsibility. Who knows what will happen when Ottaviani sees me?" Who is Ottaviani? A good guy. Very, very good cardinal. The one who stood up to Paul VI in 1969 with Cardinal Bacci and said, "This new mass is the most capable of satisfying the most modernistic of Protestants. You took everything Catholic out of it." But by this point, Cardinal Ottaviani was still the head of the secretary of the Holy Office. But by 1969, he was retired. He was nearly blind himself. I mean, he must have his life, you know, finished in, I'm sure, the greatest sorrow. He just couldn't believe what was happening. He's the one that said, "I hope I die a Catholic." He was heard to say that during Vatican II. So again, you see the night and day differences between the Catholic mindset and the modernist mindset. So I had already got to know Cardinal Ottaviani, the head of the Holy Office. I remember bumping into him once after Pius XII first allowed evening masses. He came up to me and said, "Have you heard the latest? We may now celebrate Mass in the evening. Don't people laugh when you announce an evening Mass?" It took me a little time to see what he meant, but it was a typical Ottaviani reaction. So basically, it's just, you know, I mean, Cardinal Ottaviani said we can do evening Masses, but it disturbed him. You know, but he obeyed. There's something, a change a pope can do. He didn't think it was the best idea, but anyway, what Koenig is trying to imply here, Ottaviani's just this old guy who has a hard time with new ideas. And, you know, we have to be nice to him, but, you know, people like him will have to be gotten out of the way. You know, when they retire, you know, or get them reassigned or whatever. So I'm just going to finish this paragraph and then I'm going to put this aside. I was somewhat worried, this is Koenig writing, "I was somewhat worried about what Ottaviani would say to my bringing Rahner. So on my next visit to Rome, I informed him privately. Rahner," he muttered, shaking his head, "how will that work?" He wasn't against it, just worried. So, anyway, we could keep going on. about this, but we'll run out of time for what we need to cover. Okay, so let's look at page 481 in our book. It's the beginning of chapter E, Statistics in Tumultuous Times. And again, well, Father starts the fathers start off well. By their fruits you will know them. Every good tree bears good fruit, but the bad tree bears bad fruit. A good tree cannot bear bad fruit, nor can a bad tree bear good fruit. And of course, that's quoting our Lord, Matthew chapter 7. The Catholic Church thrived in America before Vatican II. Historians have recorded the frequent reception of the sacraments, regular attendance at Sunday Mass, and the unparalleled growth of the church. So you can just, what did the church grow by? In 1669, there were 2,000 Catholics, 1708, 3,000, in 1755, 7,000. By 1931, 20 million. Between 1940 and 1960, American Catholics grew in number from 20 to 40 million. So in 20 years, they doubled their numbers. Catholics in the United States. Religious doubled from, or priests doubled from 25,000 to 50,000, religious from 50,000 to 100,000. 75% of these Catholics were at Mass on a given Sunday, and 80% were validly married. They had a high birth rate and a low crime rate. By the way, I just read something last year that in the Archdiocese of Orange, or the Diocese of Orange in California, the biggest parish, in other words, the greatest number of numbers of Catholics is actually the prison system. That's where the most Catholics are to be found. More Catholics in prison than there are in any parish in the and these are parishes that, you know, talk, they're like 2,000 to 5,000 families, you know. So, but that's the I wonder who takes care of that parish, the parish of the prison ministry. So this was unheard of before. Of course, things were better in society anyway. I mean, we saw a tremendous decline in morality from the 50s onwards. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt, and yes, there's still, you know, again, Vatican II destroyed the sense of right and wrong. It dulled people's awareness of sin as a bad thing. And they just, they talked about the church going out and encountering the world. You bet it happened. They became the world. You can't encounter the world. The world will take over. You simply have to keep going in the right direction and try to snatch souls from the world. But Vatican II talked about over and over again, we're going to encounter the world. Paul VI said it. John the 23rd said it. Well, they did it. And look what happened. They lost the sense of the Catholic faith. Okay, so that gives us an idea of how well things were going before Vatican II. And we talked about this last week. That's on page 482, but we gave you the most recent statistics that how many Catholics were going to Sunday Mass before Vatican II in the United States? Remember, 75%. What's the percentage now? Yes, it's fallen to below 40%. And so it was above 40% when Bergoglio became so-called Pope. It's fallen to below 40. So the Francis effect hasn't been a good one. So I gave that to you in last week's class. So, all right. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yes, Paul VI was Cardinal Montini. Supposedly, Pope Pius XII wanted to make him a cardinal, and There is a debate, I think it's fair to say, whether Pius XII sent him to Milan to be archbishop as a punishment or as a step down, or whether, you know, he favored Paul VI as archbishop. Well, he made him archbishop. He didn't personally consecrate him archbishop of Milan. Cardinal Tisserand did, but then it was John the 23rd who made, I think it was the very first cardinal that he made. So he was archbishop of Milan. It's the largest Catholic diocese in the world, numbers wise. So this happened in about 1956, I think, and that's where Montini was. And then, but you know, you look at his speeches and what he was doing as Archbishop of Milan, very problematic. I mean, he was espousing, you know, the kind of changes that these modernists were talking about. I mean, he was saying it himself. It was after, that's right, it was after one of his speeches that Montini speeches that Ottaviani said, "I hope I die a Catholic." He couldn't believe what he was hearing from Montini. But then, you know, he just felt like he had to accept him as Pope when he came along. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, go ahead. Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. I'll try to paraphrase them for the sake of the recording. So, yeah. Are homeschooled? Yes. Okay, I'll just paraphrase that, that nowadays there has been an uptick, you might say, in the numbers of seminarians, but they're coming from homeschooled families, which in every case I would say are conservative minded, and so yes, they're benefiting from that, but unfortunately they're still deceived. They think it's a true priesthood, and they think we just have to interpret Vatican II in a conservative way. Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, so what are they typically saying now, the mission statements of Novus Ordo schools? Yeah. Oh, yes, I know, exactly. Right. 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 Well, let me just say, your great observations about the Novus Ordo universities. I don't trust any of them, because even the ones that want to be faithful to ex corde ecclesia and submit to the Catholic teaching, what are they submitting to? They're submitting to Vatican II, and that's, which is heretical. So none of them are any good. But most so-called Catholic colleges, they just have the name and nothing else. Remember, this goes back to the 1960s when a number of Catholic universities got together and said, we cannot be bound by Catholic teaching because that would inhibit our academic freedom. So that's the majority of so-called Catholic universities. There's a small minority. Cardinal Newman Society definitely promotes them. They said, these are the faithful ones. But faithful to what? Faithful to Vatican II, or a conservative interpretation. So they've got heresy mixed in. I need to find where Bishop Sheen said this, but he said before he died, do not send your children to Catholic university. They will lose their faith. He said, better that they go to secular universities where it's the devil that you know, so to speak. Instead of sending them to a Catholic university, now you have the devil that you don't know. You're trusting them to be teaching the Catholic faith. So you see, that comes from Bishop Sheen, and I've seen in more than one place. So if that's what he, and Bishop Sheen died in 1979, he was effectively retired by 1969. So, you know, this was after Vatican II. He's saying he knew that they were going to refuse to conform to Catholic teaching in the name of academic freedom. Okay. All right. So let's keep going on here. Page 483, this just says how many Catholics are, how many people are leaving the Novus Ordo Church. And of course, the references are here. Down at the bottom of page 483, you know what the one of the fastest growing categories of religion is? The no religion category. In other words, on surveys, when people fill in their religion, the fastest growing segment is none. All right. Okay, page 484. So that was looking at our country, and I'm going to show you some more statistics here from 2013. But anyway, going back to our book, page 484, worldwide loss of faith. First paragraph there talks about Quebec, a very strongly Catholic area. It's basically Catholicism is completely gone as a practice. Still some beautiful churches left. I'm thinking of the cathedral in Montreal. But less than 10% attend Mass regularly compared to 90% a few decades ago. Does that sound like a good thing? 90% to 10%. In Latin America, which many Americans consider solidly Catholic, 12,000 people leave the faith every day. This was in 2002. Mass attendance in Australia has dropped from 50% to 17% since Vatican II. Argentina claims that 84% of its population is Catholic, but a 2002 Gallup poll found only 24% attended Mass at least once a week. It has been almost 100 years since Hilaire Belloc pronounced of Catholicism, Europe is the faith and the faith is Europe. This is not the case today. So the rest of this, and great reading, great reference. It's just about Europe losing the Catholic faith. Things are worse in Europe than they are in America. And we're a Protestant country. Middle of page 484, Father John O'Sullivan, editor-in-chief of United Press International, writes, missionaries are needed in Western Europe. Regular church attendance there has sunk to single digits, 7% for most Christian denominations in Britain, even lower in France and Germany. In Holland and Belgium, Mass attendance rates are around 3%. Only about 23% of Italians regularly attend Mass. This is all Vatican II. Yes, these are all Vatican II numbers. I read another article, and again, there's so much to... By the way, I don't trust any one particular survey. There's always that margin of error, and there's always that bias, I think, that's built into everybody. You know, it's hard to get a truly objective you know, assessment of something. But, you know, when you see basically the same results in survey after survey after survey, then you know you can trust it. We just that we don't, we know that there's that that probability of error in any one survey, but overall, it's telling us what's going on. But anyway, this should be so shocking, and I can show it to you if you want to see it. It's just from last year, within 15 to 20 years, there will be no more Catholic marriage in Italy. And this is a country that's like 95% nominally Catholic. The Italians, they don't get married in churches anymore. Marriage is declining because people are just moving in with each other. By the way, 70% chance of divorce when people move in before they get married. 70% chance of divorce because they're doing it completely wrong. They're not honoring the sacred institution of marriage. So combine all these things and you have an article that says marriage will disappear. Matrimony or church weddings will disappear in Italy. I mean, if you keep following the trajectory. Yes, Susan. Where are they going to church? They're not going to church. They're not going at all. It's just. You know, I don't know how it works in many of those European countries, because how do they maintain those old churches? But I do know that they often do concerts inside churches as a way of, which is in normal times, I mean, I'm not talking about just sacred music concerts, I'm talking about pretty much anything. They say, well, we need the money, otherwise we can't pay the bills. It's true that you can have, Pope Pius XII said he allowed a sacred music concert, so to speak, where you have sacred music played or sung, but no clapping. In other words, we have to preserve the sacredness. You can go there and sit and listen. That's all right. But I have, the times I've gone to Europe, I've come across a number of music concerts, and it's sometimes it's sacred. Most of the time, it was sacred music, but it was just like an auditorium, and that's what they're doing. Now, what's interesting about Germany, it's all priests are paid by the government. It's something unique to Germany that all clergy of whatever denomination have to be registered with the government, and the government pays their salary. And so if you say on your tax form, I'm Catholic, your tax money is withheld. It's not a willing contribution. It's done whether you like it or not. And actually the German church, Vatican II Church, is actually very wealthy. They're rolling in the dough, but the numbers are declining. They don't have people to put into those churches, but they have money, so they have a unique situation where they're able to do the maintenance, but they're not having the numbers are as bad there as anywhere else. Well, it's just that it's been this way in Germany for a long time. And I do not agree with this at all. I would hate to have the government that involved, that it knows, you know, everything is being collected, and it says, here, Reverend, here's your salary. That's just the way Germany is. Yes. Yeah. Maybe it started... Maybe it started off as a good, well-intentioned, but remember, Germany is mostly Protestant, like I would say 50 to 60% Protestant and only 30 to 40% Catholic. So this was all of the Protestant denominations. I mean, that's where the Lutheran Revolution happened. Okay, so Europe is sunk. And right now, with all of the unfettered immigration that's happening, Europe is going to be Muslim. And these churches are going to be mosques. I mean, can you think about that? St. Peter's Basilica one day being a Muslim mosque? It's entirely possible, the way things are going. I mean, the numbers don't lie. I mean, people talk about going down the streets of Paris or London. The mayor of London is Muslim, and they call it Londonistan. And people are getting knifed left and right, you know. In England, there's more crime in London than there is in New York City. Yes. By the sheer effect of demographics, when Muslim women are having 6.8 children per female, and it's 1.3 child per female. I mean, the handwriting is on the wall. I mean, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to say what's going to happen. And of course, it's almost as bad in America. You know, this is the evil of contraception. By the way, how many Catholics have been known to Vatican II Catholics practice contraception? 90%. I've seen some places as high as 98%. Again, when you get away from, there is absolute truth, black and white, you can justify anything. And they go to the Vatican II priests, the few that even have doubts, and the Vatican II priests will say, well, just do whatever your conscience tells you. So instead of being told what they need to do, it's just, you know, you just do what you think you have to do. Well, I can do it. I can justify anything. We were talking about seminaries, and yes, there has been an uptick there's been a small increase in numbers. You know, especially under Benedict XVI, there was a kind of a conservative, I wouldn't call it a wave, but a conservative ripple. You know, a little bit of a, you know, he, after all, he dressed very traditionally. But mark my words, and I will stand by this. Benedict XVI was worse than Francis. Why do I say that? Because Benedict XVI was as bad a modernist, if not worse, but he disguised it. He made it look traditional. Francis doesn't care. There's no effort on his part to make anything look traditional. In a sense, he's the best thing for, I would be more worried or more concerned with Benedict XVI if still being in so-called office, of course he never was, than with Francis. Yes. Yes, absolutely. Yes, they're birds of a feather. It's just that Ratzinger has more of the veneer of respectability. You know, I have to mention this famous modernist at Vatican II. And you know, they were all buddies. You know, when he became so-called Pope, he invited Hans Küng to come to the Vatican and have a beer with him. And of course he wasn't going to condemn him because they think the same way. It's just that he had more respectability. He could, you know, Hans Küng, he's like Bergoglio, just let it all hang out. Well, then you can see, you know, what he's standing for. But isn't it sad that so many people are deceived? Even the Society of St. Pius X can look at somebody like him and say, he's the Holy Father. Anyway, we're running out of time here. Middle of page 486, obviously the number of priests has fallen, even though the number of nominal Catholics has increased. And then you read about, you know, parishes closing left and right, shortage of priests. And of course, we know the promise of invalid ordinations. Let's go to page 488 and look at the bottom of the page. That really puts it well. In 1962, there were 454 seminaries. In 2003, there's 213. In 1962, there were 46,189 seminarians. In 2003, 4,522. So, what's the percentage drop on that? So, 46,000 plus down to 4,500 plus. Okay, that's. Can somebody do the math really quick? Is that like a 90% decline? Is that about okay? What would you do to the CEO of a company who lost 90% of the business of a company? Yeah, he'd have to be fired. Bad business model. Bad decisions are being made. So, again, 1962 to 2003. And now people have gotten used to this smaller number, and then they rejoice when there's a few, you know, like I said, of a small increase of some conservative-minded candidates. Religious orders are dying out, both male and female. Middle of page 491, 1964, were 180,000 nuns. 2003, 74,000, and by the way, that number is below 50,000 right now. I mean, they're dying off at quite a fast rate because, you know, they're in such advanced years. And, you know, almost always when they show pictures of them, you can't tell that they're nuns. They abandoned their habits a long time ago. I mean, can't they just see that when you take off your religious garb, you're saying, I mean, there's no two ways about it. They're saying, please don't respect me. Because the religious habit, the religious garb is very important. I mean, what would you say about a police officer who refuses to wear a uniform? I know there's plain clothes detectives, but that's obviously they have to do special work, you know, without being detected. But, you know, a firefighter, police officer doesn't want to wear the uniform, then they expect people to respect what they do. It's not going to happen. Yes. We've never seen real nuns before, yes. Thank God for our religious sisters. They know how important this is. And yes, it helps us, you know. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, indeed. Yes. You know, we have about 4 minutes left, and I want to show you some numbers that are about America that are even worse than you saw in the book. Sorry. Okay, this is from a Quinnipiac University poll. Sisters, could you help pass these out? Anyway, I looked up Quinnipiac, and it's an interesting name. It's an Indian name. Excuse me, I should probably say Native American name. It was from a tribe that was in Connecticut. So this is an American university, and they're known for their, this university is known for its surveys. And it's quoted often by media, various media types. So it's not, so apparently they do try to specialize in doing these surveys. So I give it a little bit more credibility than perhaps the average survey. But anyway, this was at the beginning of Francis's usurpation of the throne of Peter. This would be a more accurate way to put it. So it has only gotten worse. I mean, the Francis effect has not been towards traditionalism. He has done everything he can he keeps working at it every day. I mean, countless times he said, there are those people that want to cling to rigid old rules and outmoded thinking. That's not the way of the Spirit. Who's he talking about? He's talking about you and me. You know, we are the problem, according to him. So, but anyway, middle of the first page, more devout. Now, this is amazing. American Catholics support same-sex marriage 60 to 31%. I mean, the abomination of sodomy, you know, dignified with the title of marriage, 60%. And that is worse than the national outline or the national average of 56 to 36%. So not only is it Catholics are not making a difference in morality, they're worse. Okay. Catholic women support same-sex marriage 72 to 22%, while Catholic men support it 49 to 40%. Catholics like their new pope. 36% have a very favorable opinion of him, and 53% have a favorable opinion with 4% unfavorable. American Catholics like what they heard when Pope Francis said the church should stop talking so much about issues like gay marriage, abortion, and contraception. Well, right, because they're doing it. They don't want anybody. I mean, that was very welcome to their ears. Somebody who says, oh, we don't worry about those things anymore. Keep on doing it. So these numbers have to be worse than they were in 2013. All right, next on page 2. American Catholics support 60% to 30% the ordination of women priests. And this was after, and remember, even John Paul II, for all of his heresies, he did say in 1993 that it's impossible for women to be ordained. He said it's doctrinally not possible. Of course, that's being re-examined. They're trying to figure out a way to change that without making it look too bad. But again, it doesn't matter what comes from the official church. That 60% thinks that would be great. Let's have women priests. Okay. Abortion. 16% of Catholics say abortion should be legal in all cases, 19%, as opposed to 90% of all Catholics. So, or excuse me, 90% of all Americans. So they're hardly different from the Protestant or non-religious realm. 36% should be legal in most cases, 21% say should be illegal in most cases. So anyway, look at that next quote there. I mean, that tells it all. On the two issues that have prompted some pulpit thundering, same-sex marriage and abortion, Catholics are right in line or even a little ahead of their non-Catholic neighbors. So we'll have to leave it at that for today. So it wasn't going to be a nice picture that we were looking at today, but I think we've been able to dispel very effectively the idea that Vatican II was a renewal. I think we've been able to do that. Was it a new Pentecost? It was truly the triumph of the devil. I mean, again, look at the bad fruits. So, okay, well, we will reconvene next week. I know we didn't even get to that. Thank you for stapling it together. we'll pass it out next week, next Tuesday. All right, God bless you. Thank you.